Tonight, Harish is telling his story. Harish is asking us to get the blackboard out. He's a PhD. I never told y'all, but I'm a PhD too. I've got mine piled high and deep. But welcome, Harish.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you. Very good evening, friends. My name is Harish, as has been told, and I'm very content and fortunate to know that and admit that I am an alcoholic. I've never done this before, so and I don't particularly have a colorful story, so please bear with me. I'm just going to follow the format of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, if it's okay with you. So, I feel happy to see you all here, actually. I was worried that very few people would show up. It's a pleasant surprise for me. I really depend on your help and guidance, really, as you'll come to know. My current sponsor is Larry Klinger, sitting right there, and I hope he will remain my sponsor until death of either one of us parts us. Thank you, sir. I hope so. And my sponsor emeritus is in the audience. Hugh, that's sitting here. I have taken permission to take these names out, and another sponsor could not make it here today, but he's with me in his spirit. He's Dave. He had a class this evening. And I have their due permission, of course, to disclose their names. My last drink was in the really wee hours in the morning of June 5, 2008. Don't get excited now. It wasn't that colorful incident at all. It was rather a maintenance drink to keep the shakes down till I arrive at my fourth and final detox come recovery place in Tennessee, Chattanooga. Okay? I'll get to that in a bit. But my last colorful drink was something else. I was talking about my last drink. There was only 1 year, 7 months, and 10 days ago, not being colorful. I will talk more at some detail about life afterwards, as Tim asked me to, and towards the end of my talk. Okay? By profession, I'm a biomedical scientist. I had a scientific speaking engagement in China, and that was in 2007. And after that, I had a nice celebration with the Chinese royal wine, Mao Tai Chu, and I was put on a plane to go back to India. My plane ticket was booked to via Korea, and a connecting flight to India. I wanted to go to India to be with my family. My luggage was booked all the way to India. Okay? My plane was delayed, so I could not make the connection in Korea, Seoul, Korea. It was early in the morning, and the bar was right in front of me. Pretty inviting, okay? I decided to have a few drinks, all right. By that time, I'm pretty inebriated, okay? I learned that my next flight was not until the next day. So, I was transiting, so I did not have a visa to get out in Seoul. So, I bit the bullet and rebooked the next ticket. There was no way until next day I was going to be in the airport. And so I booked another next available flight that went to Dubai to India. okay, and boarded that plane. While in Dubai, I had 2 hours wait to get to India. It was the Asiana airline. I got into conversation with a man from that airlines, and he invited me to join for a drink. I couldn't refuse it. So I did that. I had a few drinks there, and I told him that I was flying your airline, and he said, that can't possibly be true, because you can't do that. They would not allow me on the plane in Dubai if I have had drinks. So I asked, what about him? He's drinking with me. He works with the airline. He said, I'm off duty, so I'm okay. So he offered to help me to talk to them. Sure enough, they said, no way. And they said that it's their responsibility that they take me to hospital. So next day I woke up to this Allahu Akbar call at 5 a.m. in the hospital. On the hospital gown, my luggage was booked directly to India, which still to this date remains in Dubai. Okay? The doctor said that I had alcohol toxicity, and I have to stay with them for at least a week. I said, no way, I seem fine. And I'm working out. I have my flight this morning, late morning, to India. So they said I could go against medical advice, but you know, really, that's not cool. So I said, well, I'm gonna go anyway. So I took the shirt they gave me with me, the hospital gown, and my shirt was spoiled while I was drinking, spilled stuff on it. So, but I wore my pants and jacket, and I the hospital shirt, and off I went. Arrived at the airport, tried to check in, and then the guy said, well, Harish Joshi, right? Yeah. Said, you're supposed to be in the hospital, weren't you? I said, yeah, but I'm just came out. He said, you came out AMA, against medical advice. It's against airline's rules. You cannot take this. This ticket, we cannot use this ticket. Well, I didn't know what to do next, so I went to other airline counters. I found Air India. So I said, do you have a flight today? They said, yeah, we do, but we don't have any dealings with Asiana. You'll have to buy a separate ticket. So I said, well, okay, I need to get to India. So I got a ticket, and I bought 2 duty-free vodka bottles, and that was my only luggage with me. I just thought, I'll go, because you end up spending a lot of money on those little bottles on the plane. So I thought it would be nice that I can sneak a little bit in. And also, my father drank at home, so I always took him presents for when I... So I arrived to my family, who have no clue about my whereabouts, because I was supposed to arrive 2 days earlier. So my next task was to fetch my mother from whose hometown is in a little village in the foothills of Himalayas in India. Okay, and it was winter, it was November, and I wanted to take her to a city where my brother was, so that she can avoid the snow, more heavy snow. And she's a patient of osteoarthritis, badly in a need for knee and hip replacement, but... Anyway, so this actually gives me an opportunity to talk a little bit about my ancestry and where I grew up, etc. And I'll take this opportunity. Well, I never saw my grandfather. I was born after his death. I was about 2. I mean, the only few incidents I can remember, I was about 2 when my grandmother, I was told, committed suicide. And I only have vague recollections, just one or two scenes of that, that her body was, bits of her body were being taken out, and she burned herself, it seems like, in a room. So I tried to jostle my memory back today, actually. Best I could remember was then, like 3 or 4 years, when I was 3 year old or 2 year old. This 2 year old, I just remember this one scene. And then I was born in a Hindu Brahmin family of 5 children, okay, living with my mother in this little village. My father worked in a city, and he worked for telecommunication. With a bunch of leftover colonial Brits, okay, in India, in a city. So telecommunication those days meant Morse code. So dot dash, there used to be one keyboard, and he visited home frequently. Home meaning that village. And the visits were always wonderful and joyous. He was a really happy drunk. He loved to drink, and he had lots of friends, lots of parties, and he used to talk philosophy. He was just very, very well-meaning, joyous, happy, joyous drunk. I went to grade school on the top of the hill, so there was this little village, maybe a few hundred population. Still is not more than 1,000. And then at the top of the mountain was a temple, always is, okay? And then there was a tree, and there was this grade school. Underneath there was one teacher, and we have 1 to 5, grades 1 to 5. I had a 5-year-old sister, 5 year older than I am, so I love to read, so I read her books as well, and rest of the time we just played primitive games, you know, just to touch each other or so whatever, like just run or do whatever, okay, just mess around. So when I was a child, I was very curious about animals. I used to play snakes, mice, whatever I could get my hands on. I experimented with them. I mean, if I find a mouse trapped in a cage that my mom used to set up, I used to I was asked to go throw it somewhere else outside the boundary. I would hit it against a rock, and I would dissect it open, see what's inside, stuff like that. But I didn't really worry about school too much. I mean, I jumped grades and stuff because I'd read those books anyway. There wasn't much to read, really. Tables and then little stories. So I was, and we used to go to on Tuesdays and Tuesdays and Fridays we used to go to temple with my mother. I was 7 when I refused to do that. It didn't make sense to me. It was 1.5 hours of doing nothing. We just had a bunch of things put in a nice platter, and then you do this puja and do whatever. Didn't make sense at all. I said, I'm not going to do this. And it doesn't make sense. They say, my dad was there then. And they say, what would you do instead? I thought I would get into trouble if I say play. I said, I would read. Read sounds fine. So my dad got me some baby books of religion, different religions. That was very perceptive of him, I thought, and very generous. That's unheard of in India, okay? I enjoyed them. I enjoyed reading them. So when I passed 5th grade, which was the school was up to, it was decided that I move to city with my dad so that I can go further from sixth grade. And so I went away from my mom, my dad, just my dad and myself, and I was admitted in a government school, which is about like 100-some children in one class. Nobody worried about roll calls showing up or whatever. That suited me fine. And my routine was to just slip out and play around with the street kids, whatever they were playing. They used to play marbles. So we used to play marbles and didn't really have any friends because I didn't know the language. I only spoke that mountain dialect. And I knew some Hindi written one, but I didn't know the local stuff. At home, when I came home, there was my dad. He used to get inebriated in the evenings. He's a jolly fellow. I really loved him. He's dead now, but he was my best buddy ever. So. And he used to talk about philosophy a lot. He asked me, only thing about school he used to ask me is that, are they teaching any English? Have they begun teaching English? I said, not really. They're saying A, B, C, D. They say, I think you should learn some English. And he subscribed to an English newspaper. It was called Pioneer. And we had no TV, radio, none of these modern amenities. He didn't care for any. So, shortly afterwards, my sister also, my elder sister, also joined me there. So my father, my sister and I. So essentially my sister became my mom, my friend, my everything, really. So we just managed around home. My dad has well-meaning drinking friends. They used to come home and have a few drinks. They all used to talk really good stuff. They although they were not formally very well educated, but they all had very good taste. And they were voracious readers of all kinds of different things. So my dad has a meager salary, okay? It's a meager job, operator of a Morse code. So he didn't have any bank account. He didn't know how to open a bank account. He got a salary in the end of the month, and he put it under his pillow. And he gave my sister whatever grocery stuff she needed for the month, and she managed it. And he gave us a few bucks for pocket money, and then rest was his to party, drink, or he also gambled once in a while. So he spent that. Simple life, okay? So I went up to 10th grade. And in 10th grade, the only pressure I got, I really wanted, during that time, during summer vacation, we used to go home, which is village, to get to spend time with my mom and rest of the siblings who were younger to me. And then only demand I really had to my dad was that I wanted a bike. So 10th grade was a board examination, which was a big deal then. And exams were annual, okay, no exams in between. So that suited me fine. Showed up for the exam, somehow managed to pass. And then when I asked my dad about bike, he said, well, if you get first division in 10th, I'll get you a bike. I said, what about if I can't? He said, then I'll have to think about a rickshaw. A rickshaw, for those who don't know, in India is a three-wheeler bike. It's a taxi bike. So that's a career. So I got the bike all right, okay? I went to 12th grade. So I'm 11, 12. And then I wanted to study physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics, these kind of things. So, but the British system in India of education did not allow me to study all of these. They wanted me to choose at that point, after 12th grade, whether I can study biology or chemistry, or I can study mathematics, physics, or I can study history, psychology, and stuff like that. I have to make that choice. So, with gritted teeth, I chose chemistry and biology because those I loved the most, but I wanted to really study mathematics and physics as well. I could not. So, I went to college, and I don't know how I loved the subjects, irrespective of what was taught or not. I somehow got the highest marks in the college. But that meant was that I was free. I had scholarship to study anything I want further on after college, which is great. So, but I have no guidance. I didn't know. My dad was not college educated. So I didn't know what to study. So I went to, used to be hot in that city, so I used to go to British Library, which was air conditioned. So hang out just to see whatever books I used to flip. And just to make up my mind what I want to study, I had no clue. And there's one book one day I flipped. The opening sentence in that book was, "Life was made up of lifeless molecules." That clicked with me. And that was a textbook of biochemistry written by Albert L. Leninger, whose instruments I could use in Baltimore. Anyway, so I went to do biochemistry, MSc, and then PhD. During PhD, I was just fascinated by brain development. That's what I decided to study. It became clear to me soon that I wanted to study this thing, biochemistry, right after PhD. I really wanted to study it. So I needed to get out of India because there was not much going on in India in biochemistry because the tools needed were different. So I, where else? I mean, Britain was another one. And then I think my dad had some resentment with Brits. I don't know. So he said, well, if you do have to get out, why don't you go where others go, where you don't have to go to anybody's home, where other people go, maybe USA. So I had that in my mind. I applied to an ad, and that was in science. It was from a young assistant professor who moved from Princeton to teach biology to students in Michigan State University. And he was fed up with competitiveness of science, and he just wanted to be a good teacher. So I applied to him, and he immediately asked for me to come. And those days, it wasn't the days of, days of free trade, so we could only buy $20. So I had $20 in my pocket, and $10 of which I spent on little bottles. I don't really remember my first drink, okay? And because they were not anything special at all. I'm sure they were, but they were not anything memorable. My professor was cool. He was young. As soon as I came, he lent me $400, and until I got my first scholarship, which would be the end of the month, and he signed me up to have my meals at the undergraduate dorm in the evening. And I just wanted to try to fit in U.S. I mean, remember, I didn't know the language. I still don't know it very well. But life was quite different at Michigan State, okay? I woke up, went to lab, ate lunch at McDonald's because I was signed up only for dinner at dorm, and arrived in the evening late. So only latecomers were there. Michigan State, you know, the magic of Magic Johnson was still lingering. He was alumni of that school. So the basketball players used to come in late. So I fit in well with them. These big guys, they said, "Hey man, come on, join us. Where are you?" "He's from La La Land." He used to say, "La La Land." He used to ask me questions about what happens in La La Land. So I used to tell them whatever. You know, they showed me how to have good times. Okay? They used to talk to, you know, you got to hit the bars, you got to go to truck stops and look at the stuff. I had a great time. I mean, I was drinking almost every evening after work. I was just with these guys. Nothing heavy, no passing out and stuff. Just having a good time. I really needed it, because just to be able to understand, talk, ask them stupid questions, you know, which I still do. Okay, my research at this time was going great, and it took me towards genetic engineering, okay? And I got really interested in understanding neurons and how these things get to be neurons, how cells get to be neurons, differentiative processes. And my professor suggested, his name was Steve Heidemann, he suggested, since he was a Princeton boy, he said, "If you want to study this thing, you got to get out of Michigan State, because you got to go into some big leagues where things are happening, because from here you cannot really, I came here just to teach, because I'm fed up with all of this." So I applied to Johns Hopkins University, where genes were being cloned for the protein that makes up a substructure of the cells that make neurons, highly asymmetric cells compared to other kinds of cells in our body, because they're very long, first of all. I mean, a meter can be meters long, 1 meter long in a lab. So I arrived happily, I packed up my stuff in my car and arrived happily to Baltimore. And I went to this department where the book was written initially, what turned me on to biochemistry. It was the Albert L. Leninger's department. He was dead, but his instruments were there, his laboratory was there, my professor was hired there after he vacated that lab. So I felt pretty smug. I'm in the right place now to learn stuff. So while there, I also met in the hospital an intern who was a child who was doing internship in child psychology, to whom I became married and then later divorced. Both of those events were happy and cordial, okay? We did not get any chance to have children. By then I was an actually associate professor here in a medical school, where I still remain. A lot went on in my professorial job. All of my research career was heavily infested with my drinking, okay? At times, I think I would not have been where I am without drinks, because I would not be open enough to talk to people. I'm so amazed at myself that I can talk to these many people without having drinks. Thanks to AA. Okay. I got an early tenure here, and about, this was about 14 years ago. But then my dad in India was diagnosed with cancer, some sort of metastatic cancer. They could not really tell the origins. My dad being my best friend, I was really inspired. I thought, oh, there are so many people studying neurons and genes and stuff. Why don't I turn my attention to cancer? So I intensely started working with cancer. And we made our key discovery in 1998, where we came up with a drug, and CNN showed up at my door, and I was pretty well became pretty well known in a small esoteric group of people working in that area. In the meantime, my drinking was progressing, okay? I never really thought twice about it. I was getting a bit jittery. I was isolated. I used to drink mostly alone. And I just developed this aloofness with society. I wouldn't answer my phone calls. Which I still don't, actually. I needed some drinks really to feel life, feel anything, really. So it was worrying me quite a bit. I was quite aware of my genetic predisposition, okay? In fact, my genetics was stronger than my dad's, because although my mom never drank, my two maternal uncles were alcoholics and died of alcoholic death. And my father was probably heterozygous, that means he had probably one copy. So I probably had both, so I was very well aware of something is wrong. So so for me, step one was really ingrained in my brain. I knew I have a problem. It's just that I didn't know how long I can enjoy it. I just didn't know. Okay? So I wanted to stop, okay? I wanted to stop bad, but I didn't know how to. I just didn't know. And I didn't really care that much because I was enjoying it. So one day I did think very carefully about it, and I called up Emery, inquired about it. What does one do about these things anyway? So they say, well, they go to detox, right? By that time I was drinking every day. If I don't drink, I get jittery. So I called detox at Emory, and I was detoxed, all right, and I was warned that I should drink carefully. Okay, I should be careful. I went to India. Okay, I went to India just like I went to vacation, and then I went to attend a wedding this time, a family wedding. Took my mom and dad with me. That wedding was in a state. In India, which was M.K. Gandhi's state, Gandhi, you know. So it was dry state. Both my dad and I like to drink, so I had stocked up for me and my dad, but that lasted only a couple of days. I was jittery as hell. My dad somehow was not, because he used to somehow not evade the withdrawals. After the wedding was over, my mom and dad wanted to go to a pilgrimage place which was nearby, and so we rented a car and we hired a chauffeur to drive us there. It was an all-day drive. It was 5 minutes on the road, and we had a head-on collision. I was on the, what they call the shotgun seat, and then thankfully there were no seat belts then. So I was thankful because the seat I was sitting in was non-existent after the accident. So the driver was thrown out. I fell on the steering wheel, and my parents got tossed around. It was a bigger car, and then they got soft tissue damage. Driver was unconscious, but later on woke up conscious, and I came out with 8 broken ribs because of the steering wheel. And my reaction was just to get back to U.S. because I knew there's nothing much I could do in India, no contacts, no hospitals. And in fact, it was a runaway experiment. The truck guy ran away. So they were taking me to a government hospital for the police purpose, and they were asking whether the needles were boiled or not, and I didn't know. I don't want this. I got to go. So I went to the airport. I bought myself booze enough to keep me well numbed. And I came back straight to Emory. I actually, from airport, I went straight to Emory Hospital. And they checked me out. They came to know. And then only I knew there were 8 ribs that were broken. And they put me in the hospital. They couldn't do much. They put me on pain medicines, opiates. You know, that's removed the pain, but I was just like a zombie. I could not understand a thing. I just, anything to read or understand anything. I just felt so, I just didn't feel anything. So when they removed me from hospital, I just quit those drugs. I just could not understand anything. On top of it, my grant was due, so I could not understand a thing. So I just decided that a drink works just fine. I just drink and just sleep and drink, sleep. And a few months went, my ribs start healing up, but I was pretty dependent on alcohol just for maintenance. Okay, so went to detox again, to Emory. Now this time I just thought I got to do something because I cannot drink. So I entered Emory psychiatric ward. Then that time it was in Eagleston near there. And then many of the residents, attending residents there, were my former students. So I was really ashamed. I mean, they were talking about addiction and all these kind of things. And anyway, the word got around fast. I was called by my chair in his office and advised that I go for a long-term rehab somewhere. So he looked it up, what are there. He suggested Ridgeview. So I had made no secrets of it, okay? I was telling everybody what's going on. So he was very very supportive, and he suggested. So I went there. He actually visited me there. And then, actually at the time, I was up for a promotion to become full hair professor. So anyway, I was actually informed in Ridgeview. He came to inform me that it went through to the medical school and everything. When I got back, though, I came to know that Board of Trustees did not like the idea. So they had actually not passed it. Advisory Council, Presidential Advisory Council. I was devastated, actually. It was not that much for myself, but just it's something that my dad wanted me to be. He just, something he valued, not money or anything, he just thought, her professor, it would be a good thing for you to do. Okay, well, you know, I couldn't do anything. Board of Trustees, I mean, what can I argue? So, had a few drinks, you know. I was careful afterwards, though, you know. I was careful in drinking afterwards. I was not drinking. But pretty soon it caught up, okay? I was same, jitters, everything. Difficult to put my signature on things in the morning. My chair advised me at that time that I should try it again. But this time, I didn't want any propaganda, you know, all residents and stuff. So I found a place in Tallahassee, Florida. It's called 12 Oaks. So I decided I want to go there. So I called in insurance, I booked my flight, I went in there, and they came to receive me there. Now, this place was great. The deal was great. Their business deal was also great. They had a direct line with the U.S. Navy. So they had many young people there. They hang out there on government expense. They charged them thousands of dollars. None of them really had any intentions of quitting drinking or whatever they were doing. Really, because they were asked to, so they just had to fill up the paperwork. And then we used to just laugh and have a good time there. No drinking going on, but Librium chuckles, whatever. We did all of that. And I think that by that time it was 2003, okay? And then one Saturday evening, I came back from there, and then one Saturday evening, nothing changed about my drinking. I was just carefully drinking, okay? One Saturday evening, I was drinking at my home, as usual, by myself. It was Saturday evening. I just noticed that I was at the end of the bottle. Next day is Sunday, so that means I will not have stock for Sunday. So I decided I just go around the corner. There used to be a liquor store in my neighborhood. They're closed now, thank God. But anyway, I thought I would get some liquor, you know, just for tomorrow, so that I have until Monday. And as soon as I was pulling out of driveway, I hit some gentleman who was going straight on the street, and he asked me, "Sir, you've been drinking?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, we should call police." I said, I didn't know. So police came over and they gave me a DUI. They asked me to blow the thing, and it was 0.06 whatever. So that was way above what I was told. So he took me in his car. The first cop guy took me in his car to DeKalb County and asked me to call someone I know. I didn't know anybody. I didn't want to call colleagues. In fact, I didn't then have anybody's number. So the police people advised me to call then. They gave me some company name, bond company name. So this lady, called the lady and just said she can help you. So she came about 13 hours later. Those hours were terrible. I just, oh God, those hours were so terrible. I was in here with all sorts of criminals, shouting all the time, profanities for nothing, just for no one, just hitting the walls, just shouting profanities, and I just didn't know what to do. I was so miserable. I was just hopelessness, you know, just dark abyss of self-pity and shame, and I don't know what. I just at that time thought death would be better, okay? Anyway, my driving privilege was taken away, of course. I called, so by that time it was Sunday evening, so by the time I got out, so I called Monday morning in the work, and I told my students what happened to me, and who came to get me. I mean, I always have some PhD students and stuff. So conveniently, those days there was a liquor store, though, so I got a ride back and forth from my work. But the liquor store, as I mentioned, was only two blocks away, in front of Walgreens, actually. A couple used to run it, who got killed, actually. But for me now, drinking was not fun anymore. Not at all. But I could not stop. I could just not stop. I used to talk Oh, am I way over? Oh, sorry. All right. Should I wrap this up? Oh, I... Okay, if you say so. It wasn't fun anymore anyway. And, okay. At that time, I had this thing about, after I drank, I had some grandiosity coming in. I used to think about, okay, I need to enter some business venture because I've discovered this drug, so I should be able to get this thing going. And I was not, I mean, I had all the, starting developing some characteristics that now we read in Alcoholics Big Book, whatever. By then, I had heard about AA, okay? I wanted to learn more, so I actually stopped by the bookstore near Decatur and Claremont. And I told them that I'm a researcher and I want to learn about this organization called AA. And do you get any book about this? So they gave me this book. It was a critique on AA. They called it a cult, and they said that it really doesn't have any results. It's random because the ones that fall out, they don't follow the AA way. The ones that do survive, they do follow the AA. So results can't go wrong. So nothing works. So nevertheless, I was so desperate that I decided to give it a shot again, and I wanted to go to 12 Oaks again. That was a great place, remember? So I asked one of my students to take me to a AA meetings. We looked on the internet, and they were all in churches, actually. So I didn't want to go to a church. Finally, I just saw this NABA thing. I asked my student to drop me off at 5:45 here. So I came anonymous. Right there, I sat right there where Thomas is sitting. I didn't introduce myself. I sat right next to Hugh, this gentleman right here. And the meeting was about, may you find him now. May you find him now. God will remove your obsession. Okay? Now you have to recall my heritage now. I'm from India. There's a God salesman on every street corner in India. Okay? I said, there I go again. Okay? After the meeting, I did speak a little bit to Hugh about it. And he suggested that, why don't I come back? I mean, just have open mind and just listen to a few more of these. And maybe you should come in the morning, because serious people come in the morning, 7:30. So step two was in sight, okay? I believed Hugh. He said he has been sober years. I never believed any of this stuff, like 27 years sober, 5 years sober, 1 year sober, 90 days sober. What's the point? Just not get into trouble, right? Don't have jitters, don't get into trouble. So what's the point? So I believe Hugh. So step two was in sight, okay? Can be done. I didn't know how, okay? So I knew it somehow can be done because I believed this guy. So I went in the morning meeting. I asked my student to drop me by in the morning. She was writing thesis, so she had to come to get updates anyway every day, feedbacks and stuff. So I asked her to drop me, go here, and we stopped by before work here. And I had a shot of my vodka in the morning early, and I came here and I sat right next to Hugh, and I asked him to be my sponsor, actually, and he graciously agreed. And this went on for about a week, okay? And then I believed everyone is so sober. I felt really ashamed, self-pity, and really in a sacrilegious way, because not only I was not helping myself, but I was really, really disturbing these people, because I'm being hypocritical and at least not letting them be sober and just getting in, so I stopped. Then on my drinking was anything dramatic, not anything dramatic or colorful until 2007 event in Korea I just mentioned. Let me pick up there just for a moment. I told you that my task then was to fetch my mom from her mountain village to my brother's, to the holy city where Ganges runs, okay? We arrived after a day-long cab ride to a city where I could catch a train from, so I deposited my mother in a waiting room, and the next thing I remember was I woke up in a hospital, okay? It turns out that I was passed out in a train and rushed to emergency in the new city where my brother was, and doctors pumped my stomach and thought I had food poisoning and some drinks. And I probably had both, okay? Anyway, whatever it was, I spent 5 days there, and during that time my visa for India ran out. Remember, I'm a US citizen, so I have to take visa to go to India. So it took me about 1.5 months to sort all these papers out. I had to call here to ask all the papers, all the proofs and stuff. I was then convinced that I'll die if I don't quit now. I did some research on best places for detox again. Not Emory, not 12 Oaks, not this, not that. I found a place in Chattanooga, okay? I called that place, and that was 5th of June. That's my sobriety date. And I went to Chattanooga. I wee hours in the morning, I did take a drink just before I went, so that I don't shake. I asked a student of mine, a new student, to drop me there and just take my car away. I was very serious then. I talked to these guest lecturers that come, AA folks, and I just knew that I knew it can be done, but I didn't know how. As soon as I came back, I started coming every day to Napa, 4:45, actually any time I could. And I did 10 step every day. I read book and I did 10 step. That's all I could latch on to. I mean, I thought that works just fine. And one day I met then a very kind soul here named Dave, okay? And Dave, I was so impressed by Dave that he is doing so much of service work. And he actually took me to his home group every day for about a month. After 5:45 meeting up to 11 late night, I wasn't comfortable driving around town during night. So he dropped me back here where my car used to be. And yeah, I'm yet to see such a devotion in and self-sacrificing person actually. And he, after some time, he asked me to join his home group. I couldn't really commit to it. I have a lot of respect for the heroic efforts of it, his home group, but I did not really feel qualified from inside, because what I saw him doing, I could not ever fathom myself doing. You know, he is such a self. Anyway, I had NABA anyway. I was happy with it. I loved the Serenity Prayer. No sign of HP, whatever. And then I still cherish Serenity Prayer, okay? I enjoy meetings. I do not think about drinks anymore. One evening, the meeting was on his will, okay? It was a very serious evening. Somewhat sort of intimidating, okay? All of a sudden, I heard a laughter at the corner. The corner right there. And then somebody said, after the laughter, well, the bottom line is, what happens is God's will. And that was Larry Klinger right there. It so happened that he had an And he became my sponsor. He remains my sponsor today. I'm glad. He was a providence, act of providence, I guess. It so happened that he had an attack of cardiac arrhythmia the very next day. Okay? The very next day, and ended up in Emory Hospital. And then I had a chance then to spend every day, hours and hours during night with him until he fell asleep. And I did my steps up to 4th to 8th. And I was doing 10 anyway, which was cool by him. I've done some of 9. It's work in progress. 4, 5, 6, etc. Everything work in progress. I try whatever 12 I'm asked for. I'm doing one today, right now. It was tough. When I walk into an AA meeting, particularly the 7:30 a.m. one, I have a higher power, okay? I cannot put my finger on it. The best I could describe it is it as a collective conscience of the group, okay? We read literature every day, get a chance to share, and it is a revision of all the steps every day, essentially for me. And really not listening or talking or reading that helps. What really helps me is watching people, how they behave and how they think. And, well, spiritual awakening, I don't know. But one thing that's what definitely happened is my attitude has changed entirely. Okay? I show up, I listen, I watch the AA walk, I try to emulate it to the best of my ability and see what happens. I see a miracle now when I see a brown seed hitting the black soil. Out comes green foliage and a purple bloom. I do see a miracle. So I started this talk in a theme of gratitude towards alcoholism, and I would like to end it with a gratitude to AA, and thank you for listening to me.
Thank you.
And the board here is about attitude. Attitude adds up to 100%.
Okay, the seventh tradition states that there are no dues or fees for AA membership, but your generosity supports this group and AA is own. And I've asked Frank to hand out the chips.
I'm Frank Waters, I'm a recovered alcoholic. And here and around the country we have a chip system. In this area we have a white chip, sign of surrender. Just a reminder of what you're trying to do. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you pick this chip up. After 30 days, they give you a silver chip, it's an aluminum chip, it's not a beer can. You've got some stuff on there you can read. 90 days, you get a red chip. 6 months, you get a yellow chip. It's called the yellow chip because it's yellow. 9 months, you get a green chip. It's green. If you're here multiples of years, you get blue chips. Or if you're a friend, you know, your friends may give you a special chip with, if you have a home group or something.
I'd like to take a blue group for 17 years here.
Does anybody here want a white chip tonight? I don't have to hug you, you can just get it. Anybody have 30 days? Anybody have 3 months? 90 days? 6 months? 9 months? Congratulations, little chip you hold.
Okay.
Hey, Carl, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Carl.
I wanted to take a chip here. My birthday is actually December 17th, but I come out here about four times a year.
I come to a few meetings. This is one of them. And I really enjoy this Atlanta AA. I get a lot of stuff I bring back to my meetings in Wyoming. So anyways, I just thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Carl.
Got a special tip I'm going to give to one of my sponsors here. This is Tim Moore. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
I'm presenting this tip to my friend, sponsor Tim. I went into treatment after being around this clubhouse for over 5.5 years. I came back to that, but I knew I had to do the work. So I asked Bob Meadows to be my sponsor. Bob Meadows pointed at this man right here, and he was the man I was appointed to be accountable to, which was a sponsor, and everybody need one, but I'm presenting him with a 7-year tip.
I'm Tim, I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you.
7 years, and this is, Harish, that was beautiful. It couldn't have been better. Thank you so much for being here, and your home group friends for being here. And we just have a lot of fun here. And I'd encourage anybody, if you're not already, get interested in a meeting and commit yourself to that meeting and get familiar with it and the regulars there. And this has just been great, and it just gets better and better, and it really does get better. And I say this every time because it's just the way I feel. It's like my wife says, when I came into AA, it was like water skiing. All I did was hold on, and everybody else pulled me up. And that's been my experience, and I love y'all. So thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. And Tim Moore is also my sponsor, and I can't tell you how much his influence is. Made a difference in my life, and thank you. Okay, AA announcements. Got any? Yes, sir.
Mark, an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
I have the key to the literature cabinet. If anyone would like an AA literature, soon after the meeting.
Dang.
Yes, Frank.
What's up, Frank? On the 17th, we have a memorial service here for Tommy G. And on the 23rd, there's a memorial service for Jerry Hunley at the Salvation Army. And on the 31st, NAVA has their membership meeting here.
At
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, Sunday, January 31st.
Right.
Now, I had announced a couple of weeks ago that we would give more information about the chairs. Are we still thinking?
We're still selling NAVA chairs for $5, the old chairs for $5.
And they can, people can buy those?
Right.
As we speak?
As we speak.
$5. That yellow, I mean that orange or purple chair that got you sober?
For those desk chairs. They're also for sale.
Oh, and the desk chairs too?
Wow.
All right. Just think about all those dollar bills that you've already invested. Five more dollars in... You're vested.
It's a history.
Yes, indeed. Next week, we have Annie B. Annie B. is very well known around these parts. I heard her tell her story when I first came in about a little over 2 years ago. And actually, I think it was the first assignment I had to record a speaker's meeting, and I'm hoping to do a better job this next week, so if anybody wants a recording for Annie B., I'll try to make sure I do a better job this time. And then after that, Carol, our office manager, Carol Grant, is going to pick up a 20-year chip on the 25th. So we got two wonderful ladies coming up. And if there's nothing else, I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Lord,
Uh, Wills, would you take us out, please, sir?
Let's have a moment of silence to those alcoholics both in and out of this room still suffering, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
No more drinking?
Change is the app is an effect. You never said that to me.
We got it on tape now.